Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our three ideas in 30 minutes. You will notice that there is something different about this week. Two things, actually. Number one is you have two packets instead of one. And number two is one of them is colored. Now, the reason why it's colored is because I made the copy and clearly I don't know what I'm doing. But the reason why there are two packets is because I saw an idea late this afternoon after I'd already made the packets and I liked it so much that we're still in limbo what the third idea will be. So I don't know. If we have time, maybe we'll do four. Maybe we'll do three. I'll have to feel how it's going to decide which one's going to be the third idea. So hang on, and I guess we'll see. I also want to thank Yuri Framowitz for sponsoring the chillin' tonight. Oh, there he is. And celebration of the upcoming bris to Judah and Eliza. And we give you a bracha that all your grandchildren, you should see them raised. L'Torah, L'Chuppah, L'Maisim Tovim. You should have lots of nachas. And the bris tomorrow morning should be bezmano be'ito. And everything should go smooth. Okay, first idea comes from Sefer Maimer Mordechai, which is Rav Mordechai Schwab. This is, I think, a somewhat obvious idea, but I like how he reads into the Pasuk, and sometimes the most obvious ideas are the ones that we need to reiterate more than anything. He asks the question, which is, how is it that Paro is unmoved by everything that he is seeing? That, I think, is the million-dollar question that you experience as you look through these parshios. He says, Halomid parsha social para rasha, roa davar pella. He says, I understand. Ha'ech lohi kir paro as bore olam. How is it that Paro saw all of these miracles, and yet he was completely unmoved by all of it? He asks, I did not quote every page of his source sheet, but he continues on by quoting a very powerful medrash, where the medrash tells us that it was Paro who was the king of Nineveh. That the story that we read on Yom Kippur afternoon of the tshuva of Nineveh, that was none other than Paro. The medrash says, Bo Remi Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Shemarad Betsur El Yon Harbe. You don't have this. And then he becomes the king of Nineveh. So he asks the question, how is it? Veichi Tachin Lomar Shalora Masei Hashem Gami Kodem. Paro was the one who in Nineveh initiated the entire tshuva process. How is it then that he was so oblivious? Again, historically, you'd have to figure that out. But how is it that he was so oblivious to the entire narrative of what's going on in the parsha? And again, I think that's the million-dollar question. So if we turn the page to page number two, he writes the following. The pasuk tells us that when Paro encounters Moshe and Aaron, and I forget which exact plague it was, but the pasuk says, Vayifen Paro vayavo el beiso, Veloshas libo gam lazos. He says, if you pay attention to the pasuk, it is a striking pasuk the way he describes it. Vayifen Paro. Paro turns. Vayavo el beiso. Like, in other words, he goes home. And as you read the pasuk, you almost get the feeling, if you're creating an image of Paro, he's kind of like shrugging his shoulders, oblivious, completely unmoved by everything he says. And therefore, if you look at the bottom of that page where I have the underline after he quotes that pasuk, he says, Vitzrichim livayir. Lama tzarich hakasav lahagid shebo el beiso. He says, if you think about it, the whole notion of coming to his house is completely superfluous. It's unnecessary. You could have very easily just read the pasuk. Vayifen paro velo shasli bo. You don't have to say vayavo el beiso. And he went home. Says Rav Mordechai Schwab, the answer is, Ela bezeh gilsa lanu hatorah kolsod paro rasha. Says Rav Mordechai Schwab, this tells us the real wickedness of Paro. That what made Paro so bad? Shehagam Sheroa Kola Osos Ve'amosim. That even though he saw all of the miracles from Hashem, Lo Na'ase Alav Shum Roshem, it left no impact on him whatsoever. Ela Nog Be'anagaso Kepoal Avodoso. It was like any other day of work. Shebeis Misuyemes Nigmar Malachto V'halach Lebeis V'shalom. It was like any other day of work where he closed his book, closed his computer, and he went home. And he didn't pay attention whatsoever to everything that was going on around him. So to me, this is a very simple idea, but I think it's such a beautiful diuk, it's such a beautiful observation in the pasuk of why do you need the words vayavo el beiso? Because it almost makes it normal. It almost makes it like a regular occurrence. Same way he went home from work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So too, when the plague of Dom happened, he went home from work on Thursday also. And it was just a regular day, it was an ordinary day. This, says Mordechai Schwab, represents the real wickedness of Paro. What could cause someone to see such overt experiences of God and godliness in the world and still continue in his wicked ways? The answer is if you become oblivious to it. If you don't pay attention whatsoever to everything that's taking place around you, so then you completely miss out on it. I remember very vividly when this was during COVID. So my mother rented a house down here, a few houses away from us in Thornhill Mews. And one day I was talking to her and she said to me, she said, you know, part of the most amazing part about living down here in Florida, she says, I daven outside every morning and it enhances my davening so much that I sit there and I listen to the birds chirp every morning. And I remember thinking to myself, I've lived here now, at the time it was probably like 12 years. I don't think I heard a bird chirp once in my 12 years here. I don't know, like when's the last time you've gone out in the morning and you've heard the birds? Maybe you guys do. I never heard birds chirping in my entire time here, right? Yet, all of a sudden, it took my mother davening outside to open up my ears and eyes to the fact that when we walk outside in the morning, there's like incredible nature. There's literally the miracles of nature all around us, but we become oblivious to it, either because it becomes regular to us or because we just go about the rat race of our lives. We get up, we go out in the morning, we go to learn, we go to davening, we go to work, we go to the gym, we go to carpool, we come home and we do bedtime and we do that. And then it's like rinse and repeat every day. That's the Ve'avo El Beiso. That's what it's describing, says Rav Mordechai Schwab, by those three added words. Why do you need Ve'avo El Beiso? Because it's showing that for Paro, like it was just a day like any ordinary day. I'll tell you one other quick story, cute story about this. We were driving home from Disney a number of years ago. And I was pouring rage, like a deluge, like one of those real summer, it must have been July. It was one of those real summer downpours. And I had timed it perfectly to leave Disney and to get back here just enough time to quickly write a drasha, shower, and get ready for Shabbos. And so I had a time to a T. We were driving home, and it was one of those, like, you couldn't see more than a few feet in front of you. And all of a sudden, I see, like, I screech to a stop because I see that the car in front of me flipped over. So, of course, my wife, who's at Tzadikas, who's a righteous person and is a nurse practitioner, so she jumps out of the car, and in the pouring rain, she goes and she helps this couple that flipped over their car. Ironically, the other person right behind me was another from Jew, and she came to help also. So my wife was so excited, you know, sometimes you need two people. So she said, oh, you know, are you also a doctor or nurse? She goes, no, I'm an OT. My wife's like, I don't know if that's going to be so helpful right now. But anyways, the two of them were able to help out until the ambulance got there. After they finished, the ambulance got there, and I realized what was happening because they were closing off. It was a two-lane highway, and they were closing off the whole highway. And I'm like, I ain't getting home for Shabbos. So my wife got in the car, and instead of waiting around, I quickly pulled ahead of everybody and got home for Shabbos. But meanwhile, every other car behind me, that was the Siyata Dishmaya component to it. But anyways, when my wife got back in the car, I was so proud of her. Here she was. She was literally sopping wet, drenched, didn't even flinch, jumped out of the car to help someone in need. And so I looked in the back mirror. I said, you know, kids, aren't you proud of mommy, what she just did? And all three of them looked up from devices and they said, what happened? What did mommy do? Why? Oh, we stopped? And I was like, hello? Like, open your eyes. That's Paro. Not that I'm comparing my kids to Paro, but that's Paro. The Paro of Ayavo El Beiso is like, it's just a regular day and you're completely sleepwalking and you're going through the rat race and it's rinse and repeat every single day and you're completely oblivious to it. So he concludes, you don't have this because again, I didn't want to overwhelm you with source sheets, but he concludes this entire thing about what he calls his bonenus, which means like paying attention to what's going on around you. He says, Zos tzrichim ladas. You should know the following. Shebesoch kol echad yesh chelek mi paro harasha. He says, inside every single one of us, there is a part of Paro. Dahainu chisaron his bonus v'simas leiv. When we don't pay attention to what's going on around you, when you don't pay attention to the sunrise tomorrow or the birds chirping tomorrow or the grass growing or when you go to the bathroom tomorrow morning, and when you don't pay attention to that, Hayotzi Misham Shaloli Min Musa. He says, you're no different than Paro. You're no different than seeing all of those miracles and you're just oblivious. Al Kain Srichin Lis Chazek Me'od. He said, therefore you have to strengthen yourself to open up your eyes and open up your hearts to be able to see these miracles. Right? We've spoken about this, but you know, the fact news cycles progress so quickly that we see a miracle happening in Israel and we're like, oh, that's amazing, that's super cool. And then we go on to the next one. If you think about the miracles, we had a speaker here, if you did hear last week, I forgot who he said he heard it from, but he heard it from a gadol who said that the miracles of Israel being protected from Iran was no less, if not more, than the splitting of the sea. He said that's how big the miracles were. But we're on to the next news cycle because, you know, it's like, okay, vayavo el beso, we went home and we went to sleep and we woke up the next morning, we went to work. That's the avoda. The avoda of these parshios is to extract that paro. As he says, kol echad yeshlem chelek paro. Every one of us has a part of paro. That when we miss those signals, when we miss those opportunities to see Hashem in the world, then we are no different. Paro, a beautiful insight from R' Mordechai Schwab. Idea number two, we're going to pull an audible. We're not going to do the idea that is in your source packets from Rav Yerucham Levavitz. You can see that on your own. But we will see from the second sheet. This, I just thought, was such a beautiful, I never saw it before, so for me, it got me excited, and hopefully it'll excite you as well. So the Pasuk says, Velo Shamu El Moshe, that they couldn't listen to Moshe. Why? Mikotzer Ruach O Me'avodah Kasha. How do you translate that? Mikotzer Ruach O Me'avodah Kasha. So Kotzer Ruach is, let's say, some shortness of breath, and Avodah Kasha is the hard work. Okay? And the Pashup Shot is, the simple understanding is, that when you are in such a state of chaos, like the Jewish people were, so they didn't have like, you know, sometimes you have to like exhale. They couldn't exhale to understand what Moshe was saying, that the redemption was going to come. Like they couldn't believe. And that's the understanding that we usually have. In Kotzer Ruach and Avodah Kasha, everyone bends into a pretzel to try to figure out, like, what's the real difference between the two of them? What's the difference between Kotzer Ruach and Avodah Kasha that the Torah needed to tell us not one of them, but both of them? Listen to the Ralbag, though. This was unbelievable. I literally saw this afternoon because I found I was speaking at Mincha, and while I was looking at something from Mincha, I came across this, and I just never seen it before. Maybe this was obvious to you. He writes here the following. This is from Rav Chaim Druckmann's Sefer on the Parsha, not to be confused with Rav Druck, who Rabbi Goldberg quotes a lot. This is Rav Druckmann, but he quotes the Ralbag, and he writes the Ralbag. V'lo ha'minu b'nei Yisrael. This is like two-thirds of the way down. V'lo ha'minu b'nei Yisrael b'divrei Moshe. Why didn't the Jewish people listen to Moshe? Mibnei kotzer ruach Moshe. Because of the kotzer ruach of Moshe. Lit bonein b'sidur dvarav karoi. Kedei shiyafe lahem zeh ha'maymer ba'ofen shiyakansu dvarav be'oznehem. Why weren't they able to listen? It's Mikotzer Ruach Moshe. Now retranslate the words for me. He adds in that word Moshe there. Mikotzer Ruach Moshe means, help me, that Moshe was speaking in a certain way that they couldn't understand him. They couldn't listen to him. In other words, it was Moshe's Kotzer Ruach that led them to not be able to listen to Moshe. And so there were two very distinct things here. There was the Avodah Kasha. That was the external force that the Egyptians were putting on them. But then there was the Kotzer Ruach of Moshe, which means it was the shortness of breath. It was that of Moshe, the way he spoke to them, that was causing them to not be able to listen to him. Which means the following, and he points this out at the bottom. He says, Adko heveinu bepashtus. Up until this point, we thought, Sheyisrael lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha shelahem. In other words, that it was their shortness of breath that didn't allow them to appreciate what Moshe was saying. HaRabag maskim she'avodah kasha hi shel Yisrael. He says, the Rabag agrees that the hard work, that was the Jewish people. Ach, however, the Rabag says, she'akotzer ruach hu davka shel Moshe. In other words, it's not just about the message, but it's about the messenger. It's about the way you give over the message. So I could tell you something, but if I tell it to you in the wrong way, you're not going to be able to listen to me. And you're not going to be open to the feedback that I'm giving to you. Now, we all know this. We know this as parents. We know this as educators. We know this as friends. You could tell someone something in a number of different ways. Sometimes they'll hear you and they'll be receptive to the message that you're teaching them. Sometimes they'll reject it completely and want nothing to do with you ever again. The difference is not the message. The difference is as how you, the messenger, are able to deliver the message. So if you scream and you yell and you berate and you're condescending, and then no one's going to want to listen to you. You could have the most constructive, productive thing in the world to say, but if you're saying it in the wrong way, nobody's going to listen to you. I actually had a conversation with someone in the shul about this maybe 2 years ago. Person's in a very high position in their institution, and they were encountering constant friction in meetings, in advisory roles, and basically they were essentially getting demoted from their role. Not officially, but they were being taken away certain responsibilities, and they were very frustrated by that. And they kept on saying to me, but I'm right, and what I'm saying is right. So why is it that like people aren't listening to me, and they're not hearing what I'm saying? And part of what I tried to help the person understand is that it's not just about whether you're right, but it's about being effective in giving over the message. Being right means nothing if no one's going to listen to you. You have to be effective in how you're communicating so that people will be receptive to the message that you're giving over. I think we see this most clearly in chinuch. Again, whether formal chinuch, informal chinuch, children, grandchildren, right? It's not just about the Torah that you teach. It's not just about the feedback that you give. And sometimes even the critical feedback that you give. If your child's doing something wrong, or your grandchild, so you sometimes have to give that feedback and you have to instruct them and sometimes even offer criticism. But how do you do it? So Moshe Rabbeinu says the Rabbag, the reason why the Jewish people could not listen to him was Mikotzer Ruach Moshe. Moshe was so, I guess you'd use the word like frazzled, or he was so overwhelmed by the experience of the exile and in the negotiations with Paro, that when he came to the Jewish people, it was Moshe who had the Kotzer Ruach. In other words, he gave it in, again, whatever word you want, a more aggressive tone, a more, a confrontational tone, whatever the word you want. But it made it that Jewish people couldn't listen to him. They weren't willing to be receptive to the message. And therefore, I think the message of this is, I'd never seen that understanding, the Kotzer Ruach of Moshe. It wasn't the Jewish people who were having the trouble. It was Moshe, the way he was delivering the message. That was the problem. And I think that's a very powerful lesson for every single one of us in terms of not just focusing on the message that we're giving, but we as the messenger, how we're giving it over. Are we being calm in the way that we're giving it over? Right? Rabbi Goldberg's teaching the Igaris Ramban on Wednesday mornings. That's how the Igaris Ramban starts off. The Igaris Ramban starts off by talking about Shema Bnei Musar Avicha, that you want to impact your children and grandchildren and people around you. He starts off by saying you have to diber benachas. He says you have to speak calmly to people if you want people to listen, right? When's the last time you've been receptive to someone when they came and berated you and screamed at you and chewed your ear off? Right? You might have to if it's a boss, but by and large, that's not what's going to create a long-lasting relationship. And this is obviously not something that comes easy. It's not something, certainly, I know my wife's going to be listening to this in a few minutes. I am definitely far from perfect in this, but I think that's something that we can work on. And I think it's gratifying to know that the same way Moshe Rabbeinu was an avoda for him, so I think it's an avoda for me and all of us as well. The Kotzer Ruach of Moshe. It's not just the message that we're giving over, but it's we as the messenger, how we are giving it over. That is idea number two. So idea number one was a beautiful idea from the Maamar Mordechai, from Mordechai Schwab, about paying attention to what we're seeing around us, not allowing that inner paro inside every single one of us. Idea number two is the Rabbag of Kotzer Ruach of Moshe. Not just the message, but how we, the messenger, are giving it over. I want to skip the next page you have. Go to the English. This is one of my favorite ideas in the entire Torah. Now, I could have tried to razzle-dazzle you and quote it inside in the Hebrew, and I'm happy to share it with anyone if they would like, but I thought that sharing it with the English would resonate more with more people, and so hopefully you will be equally impressed. But he quotes from the Ohel Torah. The Ohel Torah is written by the Dibna Magid, and he writes the following. I forgot the name of the person who puts this out. It's a Parsha sheet. It's a lot of gematrias. I usually don't understand any of it, but this one jumped out at me, and it's very powerful. He writes here in the middle of the page. And the Ohel Torah explains the connection. Don't worry about what happened before that. Paro was terribly arrogant, and he believed that he was the ruler of the world. He denied Hashem's existence, and he was the epitome of gaiva, of arrogance. He says the word pretty much sums up the nature of a Baal Gaiva is the word ani. Now, if you look at the word ani, you'll notice that there's an aleph, a nun, and a yud. Where is the yud representing Hashem? The yud is on the outside. A Baal Gaiva, someone who puts ani, someone who puts himself first, Where does he put Hashem? He puts Hashem on the outside. He pushes Hashem out of his life. On the other hand, he says, if you look at the word ein, which means nothing, or in Kabbalistic terms, bittel, in other words, the opposite of gaiva, so it's the exact same letters of aleph, nun, yud, but where's the yud in the letter ein? It's not pushed out, but rather it's in the center, it's in the middle. Says the Dibna Magid, that the difference between someone with gaiva and not gaiva, the difference between an arrogant person and not, is where you put Hashem in your life. An arrogant person pushes Hashem outside of his life. Therefore, it's all the ani. It focuses on me. The yud is on the outside. The tikkun, the way we fix that, is by taking the yud and putting it in the epicenter of our lives. And when Hashem is at the center of our life, then it's not about me. I'm ein. I'm nothing. It's not about me. But it's about me bringing Hashem into this world. Now, if you turn the page, he goes on. He says, Paro reversed the letters of ein. He acted as though the world was under his power. It was all about the ani. It was all about me, I. And therefore, the yud is on the outside. This is what Hillel teaches in Pirkei Avos. This is amazing. Im ein ani, li, mili. So he says, if I turn the ein, where the yud is in the middle, to ani, where the yud is on the outside. In other words, if I'm so arrogant that I push Hashem out of my life, mili, then who am I? Like, what's the purpose of my life if Hashem is not involved in my life? And therefore he goes on to say, who is the first arrogant person in the Torah? None other than the Nachash, the snake. The snake who tries to convince Chava, Vehayisem Lelokim, that we're going to be like a god. And therefore he says, at the beginning of next week's Parsha, Bo El Paro is the gematria of the Nachash, is the gematria of the snake, because that is the epicenter of, that is the paradigm of arrogance. Now, why is this so amazing? By the way, he goes on to the, on the last page, he says, this is what the Pasuk says later on, that Hashem says, I'm going to do all these miracles, Leman Shisi Ososai Eila Bekirbi, that the purpose of all of the miracles is so that you should put Ososai, my signs, Bekirbo, in the middle. So he says on the bottom, Ososai is Osos Yud, that you put the Yud back in the middle. In other words, you take the Ani, the Yud of Ani, and you put it back in the Ein, because again, it's not about the I, it's not about my ego, but rather it's about Ein, it's about Bittel, it's not about me, it's about Hashem. Now, why do I share all of that with you? It's a beautiful insight, it's a beautiful gematria. For those of you listening, I know it's a little hard to visualize, but just visualize the letters Aleph Nun Yud of Ani, where the Yud is there. There, the Yud is on the outside. Someone who cares about his ego pushes Hashem out. In the word Ein, Aleph Yud Nun, is where you take Hashem and you put him in the center of your life. But the amazing part about that is both in this week's Parsha and next week's Parsha, you're going to see Hashem say, either Ki Ani Hichbadati Eslei Paro, that I, Hashem says, harden Paro's heart. In this week's Parsha, V'ani Ekshe Eslei Paro, I am going to harden Paro's heart. And the million, trillion-dollar question that everybody asks is, how could Hashem harden Paro's heart? Whatever happened to Bechir Chafshis? Whatever happened to free will? The answer, says the Dibna Magid, is that it's not Hashem who hardened Paro's heart. The Ani is not Hashem. The Ani is talking about Paro. In other words, it was Paro's own ego that caused his heart to harden. Right? It comes back to our original question that we asked from Mordechai Schwab. How is it that Paro is oblivious to all of the miracles that happened? How is it that Paro didn't see the hand of God? How does it Paro missed the warnings of Moshe and Aaron? The answer is, Ki ani hichbadati. It was Paro's ego which hardened his heart. It's not that Hashem externally hardened Paro's heart, but it's the ani. It was Paro's belief in himself. It was his ego. It was his arrogance which hardened his heart. We see this with Paro elsewhere, by the way. Pasuk in Yechezkel, which I think I misquoted the other week, and I'll probably misquote it now also, right? But the Pasuk in Yechezkel says, Liori v'ani asitini. Paro says about himself, Liori, the Nile River is mine, v'ani asitini, and I made it. Right? Because what was it all about with Paro? It was all about him. Think about the Midrashim we have in this week's Parsha. Paro, why was he in the the Nile River when Moshe came to see him because he was going to the bathroom in the morning because he didn't want anyone to see him because he wanted to deify himself. Paro was all about the ani, but it was his ego that made him blind to everything else. And you and I both know this in our interactions with people. You meet people that are so arrogant. You meet people that are so self-centered that it's self-destructive because they're unable to see another person. They're unable to see either the feedback of another person. They're unable to listen to another person. And therefore, says the Dubna Magid, it's not that Hashem, the Ani Echbarati, or the Ani Ekshah, is not Hashem hardening Paro's heart, but it's the Ani. It was Paro's own arrogance. It was Paro's own ego which hardened his heart. And therefore, he says, what we have to do is take the yud of ani and put it back in the middle and make ourselves ain. We have to make ourselves as if we are nothing, as if it's not about us, but rather it's all about Hashem. And that's laman shisi ososai. Os yud ela bikirbo. It's to place the os yud, that letter yud, back inside the center, back inside the word ain. I love that because to me, it's such a different take on what hardened Paro's heart. And it's such an important lesson for each and every one of us about the destructive nature of arrogance and ego. When it becomes about you and only about you, that is when you self-destruct. That is when you become like Paro. That is when hichbadati es libo. That's when you harden your heart. You're not able to have real relationships. You're not able to be open to feedback. You're not able to be open to self-improvement because it's all about you. And you suction the life out of the room that you walk into, and therefore you don't allow other people to thrive and other people to find their own voice. Right? That's the ani hichbarati. It wasn't Hashem who hardened Paro's heart, but it was the ani. It was his sense of ego and arrogance which hardened his own heart. That was the idea of the Dubna Magid. So we saw three ideas so far. One was Rav Mordechai Schwab, the notion of his boninus, this notion of Ayavo El Beiso. What does it mean that Paro went to his house? It means that it was just like every other day for him. There was nothing special. And a reminder to us that, as he says in very strong language, that every single one of us has a part of Paro in us. Kol Echad Yeshlam Chelek Paro Arasha. We all have a little bit of Paro. When we miss those opportunities to see miracles, when we miss opportunities to experience Hashem, so we are no different than Paro. The second idea was the Rabag, the Kotzer Ruach HaMoshe, that what made the Jewish people unable to listen to Moshe was not necessarily their own suffering, but it was the way Moshe was delivering the message. The way he spoke and the language that he used meant that the people shut him down. You see this all the time. Sometimes someone is screaming at you and you just shut them down. You're literally like, I can't listen to you anymore. You're crazy. When you calm down, I'll listen to you again. That was the Jewish people with Moshe. And it was only when Moshe tweaked the language that he used and the approach that he took, then they were able to listen to him. And the third idea, which again, I don't know, I love it, is this idea from the Dubna Magid of the notion of what hardened Paro's heart. How could it be that Hashem robbed Paro of Bechira Chafshis? The answer is, it wasn't Hashem. It was Ani. It was his sense of ego and arrogance. It was that he took Hashem and threw him out. The yud ends up on the back of the word. That is what ultimately hardened Paro's heart. We have 1.5 minutes left. And so I'll give you a fourth bonus idea very quickly, just so you see it and you have it inside. This is from Rav Yerucham Das Torah. Very strange pasuk, where the pasuk says, Vayira el Avram el Yitzchak vel Yaakov bekel shakai ushmi Hashem lo nadati lehem. It's very strange. Hashem comes and he says that I never really revealed myself to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but to you, Moshe, I'm going to do it. So Yerucham says something which I think is somewhat obvious, but again, very powerful, and it has ramifications for us. On the bottom of that piece, he says, what's amazing is, Hare kila Moshe Rabbeinu hizvada b'shem Hashem asher la'avos ha'kdoshim lo nizvada bo. Hashem gave Moshe a present that he didn't give to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He revealed himself in a way that he did not to any of the avos. Vinimsa Shahilamala Bimadriga Rama Mehem meant that Moshe was on a higher level than Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Vichol Kama Shaya Yoser Gadol, but the greater Moshe was, what else do we know about Moshe? Moshe was the one who says, Vinachnuma, what am I? In other words, the greater Moshe was, the more humble he was as well. And therefore he says, Zechidish Gadol, and I'm not going to have time to develop this as much as I had wanted to, but he says, Zechidish Gadol, Liyaos Adam Machzik B'midah Magadlus. He says it's a chiddush to be able to be someone so great, but also to be so humble. And Rabbi Yerucham says that's what we understand in the Gemara Megillah, which we, again, there's a very beautiful tefillah. I always say it's not said often enough. We don't say it here in our shul. It's one of my big regrets. V'yitein lecha. I always say this. But in the end of V'yitein lecha, on Motzei Shabbos, we start off with the pasuk that says, or the line in the Gemara that says, B'chol makom she'ata motzei gdulaso, that whenever you find in the Torah, it talks about the greatness of Hashem, it also talks about Hashem's humility. And humility there is defined, if you look at the psukim, that it goes to quote in a very specific way. It's Hashem caring about the needy and the indigent and the widows and the orphans. In other words, Hashem is what we call like big God, with a capital B. Hashem is the creator of the heavens and the universe. But yet, b'chol makom she'ata motzei gdulaso, when you find his greatness, you also find his anivus, his humility, quote, you know, kaviyachol, that Hashem cares about every little being and every little person. And therefore he says that was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was even though, Ve'ira el Avram, v'shmi Hashem, even though Hashem gave Moshe things he didn't give to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that same Moshe never lost sight of who he was, and that was the v'nachnuma. He was able to maintain that sense of humility, which actually is a great compliment to the Dibna Magid's idea, because that was the foil to Paro. Paro was the exact opposite. Paro only focused on his own greatness and was unable to also maintain that humility. Moshe was the exact opposite, was able to balance the great gifts that Hashem gave him in recognizing his greatness, but also appreciating the V'nachnuma. And with that, I leave you all a very good Shabbos.